In recent years, we've gotten all too used to mob behavior. The ugly side of mob behavior. It's not very hard to get a mob of people worked up, especially when that mob consists of people who already feel ignored, misunderstood, or disrespected. They're like fuel, already heated up. They only need a spark to burst into flames. Having trouble with this. There we go. All it takes for an inferno is a few charismatic and outspoken leaders who know what the people are frustrated about, who throw out some broad, sweeping allegations that contain a grain of truth, but are purposely stretched way beyond the truth, and who reframe it in language that amplifies the frustration, feeds the fears, and puts power in the hands of people who thought they had lost power. And before you know it, there's a mob that is almost unstoppable. It happens in person, in real time, like we saw it unfold on January 6th, 3 years ago, and countless other times and places around the world today. And it happens online, every day, all day. Online mobs do tremendous real damage to real people as anger and shame spill over into real life bullying, violence, and other criminal activity. Acts 17 almost feels like today's news. We recognize the mob psychology on full display in this story. Paul and Silas, who do have a little reputation for being feisty, were actually behaving pretty well in Thessalonica. They were doing what Jewish rabbis do, arguing in the synagogues. It's hard for us to relate to this tradition. We might even be uncomfortable with it. But it was both routine and expected then and now. When rabbis meet in a synagogue and scripture is read, it will be followed by an open and sometimes vigorous debate about what that text meant and how it should be interpreted for our times. Each synagogue probably had its own personality. I imagine some were pretty tame most of the time, and others likely had a reputation for hot debate and raised voices. But that was simply how Jews went about working out their faith in community. They were all equally and always devoted to Torah. Commitment to Torah was never in doubt, Paul and Silas included. So here's the situation. Thessalonica was an important city of the Roman Empire situated on a major trade route. Diaspora Jews had settled there and established synagogues, but overall it was a worldly Roman city and far, far away from Jerusalem. So Paul and Silas entered the Jewish community there as traveling rabbis. Happens all the time in a city like Thessalonica. Nothing unusual about that, except the controversial interpretation that they brought to the Torah, pointing to Jesus of Nazareth as the promised Messiah. The book of Acts spells out in some detail how things developed, from polite scripture reading to vigorous rabbinical debate to heated conflict that involved both Jews and Torah-believing Gentiles, which spilled over into violence in the marketplace, spurred on by town ruffians, which brought in law enforcement. But you know, the more I thought about that sequence of events and these wild charges of treason and sedition that brought against two unarmed rabbis who were just sitting around geeking out over matters of biblical interpretation, the more I came to the conclusion that the mob was not wrong about what they were saying. Now, yes, the instigators purposely tried to overstate the allegations so as to overheat the emotions of the people already on edge by an over-militarized empire. But when they shouted out their wild complaints, they accidentally spoke the truth. They said, and I quote, "These people have been turning the world upside down, and they are acting contrary to the decrees of the emperor, saying that there is another king named Jesus." Now remember, Rome was an all-encompassing empire who ruled the whole Mediterranean Sea and virtually every region around its coast, including the Jewish homeland of Judea. Rome succeeded in this because of their iron-fisted rule of law, their military that could overpower any potential threat, and an emperor who claimed to be God and demanded their worship. They had a solid grip on the people thanks to a social hierarchy that functioned exactly as designed. It worked flawlessly from top to bottom and bottom to top. The higher in rank, the more power and influence you could have, and the more you cooperated and fulfilled your role in the system, the more likely you might be rewarded by being allowed to move up one rung and get more perks. It never paid to fight the system, because the system would just push you down a rung or two or do away with you altogether. So even Jewish authorities way off in Jerusalem typically played it safe. They didn't try to anger Rome, because doing so might cost them whatever freedom they now had. And this impulse to bow to Rome was even stronger in Asia Minor and the Greek Peninsula, just a short hop away from the city of Rome itself. So when Paul and Silas went on a mission to Thessalonica, they had a hard sell, without a doubt. They were arguing in a synagogue almost in the shadow of Rome that Jesus of Nazareth, crucified on a Roman cross, was actually the legitimate Messiah and King of the Jews, and was now the risen Lord of all creation, who needed to be obeyed before any emperor, governor, or high priest. They were taking the established hierarchy of the empire, which was accepted by Jew and Gentile alike, and turned it end for end. They were, in fact, turning the world upside down. They were, in fact, contrary to the decrees of the emperor, saying that there is another king named Jesus. That is their offense. And it is a real and true offense against the powers that be. That is the first thought that came to my mind when I read this story and read the accusations. The accusers were right. They spoke the truth unwittingly. The second thought that came to my mind was a question. What kind of offense are followers of Jesus causing these days? I actually do see quite a lot of offensive behavior these days coming from people who call themselves Christians. But it doesn't seem to be the same kind of offense that Paul and Silas were creating. I see Christians embracing the politics of coercion and deceit and fear-mongering, even turning to armed violence at times. They seek control of local, state, and national government systems and other civic institutions so they can wield power over others and protect their own interests. They aren't trying to turn the world upside down. They don't want to invert the hierarchy. Christian nationalists and those with that mindset are like virtually all political partisans, left and right. They want the same hierarchy, but they want to be the ones sitting on the top and calling the shots. Paul and Silas were by no means trying to seize coercive power from the hands of Rome. They had no interest in taking over the palace or the temple, but what they were preaching was still a threat to those in seats of power, of civil and religious power. Paul and Silas advocated a different way to look at authority. It was a moral authority based on the life and teachings of Jesus, who did not do away with Torah, but gave a new authoritative interpretation of it, grounded in love and justice. They taught something revolutionary. That when the edicts of the empire or the expectations of religion contradict the morality of Torah as embodied in Jesus, then the only right thing to do is obey Jesus and to respectfully refuse to bow to the authority of either emperor or religious hierarchy. That ironclad hierarchy that up to now functioned like a well-oiled machine and benefited those at the top was in risk of utter collapse if people stopped believing in it. So what hierarchies are the dominant ones today? Economic, social, political, racial, ideological. Do we dare undermine them with the upside-down gospel of Jesus that treasures the outcast and marginalized, that stands up for the poor and the immigrant, that says no to state-sponsored war and oppression, that prioritizes love and mercy over revenge and retribution? If no one in power is taking offense at us today, are we doing our job? If no ruffians in the marketplace are stoking a mob against us and dragging us to City Hall because we are trying to turn the world upside down, then maybe that's because we aren't trying to turn the world upside down. And maybe we should start. It all starts by turning it upside down in the way of Jesus, trusting in God's rule and putting every other rule and authority secondary to it. Are we ready to turn the world upside down? Let's share together our confession of trust in God. In a world of many gods and emperors and conflicting demands for loyalty, God of the universe, we put our trust in you. In a world where we often lose faith in our leaders, God of the universe, we put our trust in you. In a world where we mistrust our own neighbors, God of the universe, we put our trust in you. In a world where hope is easily lost, on Christ, the solid rock, we stand. All other ground is sinking sand. Let's sing together, voices together, 621, verses 1, 2, and 4.